It's VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Rwanda warns neighbors against attempting any attacks against Rwanda.
When it comes to defending this country that has suffered for so long, I don't need permission from anybody to do what we have to do, protect ourselves.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is holding talks in Nigeria. Somalia warns Ethiopia against implementing a controversial port deal. Today is the International Day of Education. A documentary by Ugandan singer-turned-politician Bobi Wine has received a nomination at the 2024 Oscars. The World Bank approved a $300 million financial package to revive Ghana's economy, but the opposition says the country does not need new loans.
These debts goes to add up to the burden of the ordinary Ghanaian. For me, a country that does not honor its debts should not be able to take more debts.
And Mokbio Yabaro will bring us up the latest from the Africa Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is holding talks Tuesday and Wednesday in Nigeria, the largest country by population and economy in the sub-Saharan Africa. His visit to the continent comes amid concerns about stability in the Sahel sub-region of West Africa following several coups in Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Niger since 2020. The U.S. senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Singh reports.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Nigerian President Bola Tinubu on Tuesday and praised his leadership, but said it is no secret that there are challenges that need to be overcome to unlock the full potential of Africa's largest democracy.
Tackling corruption, making it easier for foreign companies to repatriate capital, these will all pull in a transformative direction and pull in transformative investment. I know that President Tinubu is focused on these challenges, and we also welcome his very bold economic reforms to unify the currency and fuel subsidies.
Blinken said he had discussed the July coup by a military junta in neighboring Niger.
We also discussed challenges to democracy and security in West Africa. We very much appreciate Nigeria's leadership in ECOWAS to try to move to a return to the constitutional order and democracy in Niger after it's been disrupted.
Blinken traveled to Nigeria from the Ivory Coast, where he met with Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara and discussed regional security challenges.
We appreciate particularly the leadership shown by Cote d'Ivoire in countering extremism and violence.
Blinken said this is his third trip to Nigeria as the top U.S. diplomat, including a virtual visit during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. One expert told VOA the Biden administration's diplomatic commitment to Africa is remarkable.
I've been working in and on Africa since 1985, and I've really never seen so much attention by the U.S. government to the continent, which I think is a great, great sign of U.S. engagement.
On Monday, Blinken launched the trip with a stopover in Cape Verde, a longstanding partner of the United States. Cindy Sane, VOA News.
Burundi and Rwanda relations have continued to deteriorate, with Kigali accusing Burundi's President Evariste Ndayishimiye of inciting division among Rwandans. Burundi denied the allegations in a recent statement, saying that the accusations are unfounded. Moses Habyarimana has the story.
In a national address on the country's state of affairs, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame said that the country will not be provoked by neighbors. He said that Kigali has nothing to do with the ongoing conflict in the eastern DRC that has seen clashes between the M23 and the country's army.
Rwanda did not in any way create this war that is happening in eastern Congo. When it comes to defending this country that has suffered for so long and nobody came to the... I don't need permission from anybody to do what we have to do, protect ourselves. I will say it in broad daylight.
The president's comments come after Kigali released a statement accusing Burundi's president of inciting division among Rwandans. It also said that President Evariste Ndayishimiye further jeopardized the peace and security in the Great Lakes region. In a video circulating on social media showed Burundi's President Evariste Ndayishimiye addressing Congolese youth, saying that Rwandan youths cannot accept to be prisoners. However, in a statement on Tuesday, the Burundi government said that Rwanda's allegations were unfounded and that Kigali is propagating disinformation. According to Burundi's government, President Ndayishimiye was responding to the concern submitted to him on the failure of Rwandan youth to take part in regional meetings. George Odong is an East African Legislative Assembly lawmaker from Uganda. He says he is calling on the East African community to bring the two countries to the table.
The escalation of tension between these two partner states is deeply regrettable. It is important that they seek the most peaceful way of resolving their differences. The East African community also needs to ensure that they nip the situation in the bud. So it is important that the community actively engages the two partner states.
Relations between the two countries deteriorated early this year when Burundi closed its borders with Rwanda less than 2 years after it was reopened. John Bosco Kalisa is the chief executive officer of the East African Business Council. He says that political conflict between the two countries is affecting trade.
We urge the president of Burundi to open the border and allow trade to continue to flow, because trade has a positive impact on the citizens' welfare. So really, it's not a good move. It is going to disrupt trade and it's going to disrupt investment flows between the two countries.
Relations between Burundi and Rwanda seemed to be improving after 2020 when the incumbent president Evariste Ndayishimiye took over the office. However, it deteriorated after an armed group killed at least 20 people in Bujumbura in December last year. Burundi says the rebels are being supported and trained by Rwanda. However, Kigali says it does not support any armed groups working to destabilize its neighbors, including DRC. Moses Avyarimana for Voice of America.
Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed has warned Ethiopia against implementing a controversial port deal that Ethiopia brokered with the breakaway region of Somaliland. In an interview with Al Jazeera on Tuesday, Mohamed said Ethiopian assets will have to cross into Somalia's territory to reach the leased area and warned Addis Ababa against taking such a step. For an update on the tension between the two neighboring countries, VOA's Douglas Umpuga reached Abdi Ismail Samata, a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament.
There isn't anything new. The prime minister seems to be digging his heels, and the Somali government in Mogadishu is absolutely unrelenting in its condemnation of his sort of a declaration. And so that's where things are at. But over the last week or so, it appears that the international community, broadly speaking, up to 120 countries, have sort of reiterated their support for Somalia's position on the matter, and Ethiopia seems to be diplomatically isolated.
As you say, international community seems to be on Somalia's side. Why do you think Ethiopia and Somaliland are still reluctant to heed the call from international community?
Well, it appears to me that the prime minister thinks that he can do with Somalis what he did internally in Ethiopia with the Tigrayans. I mean, it's ironic that one of the reasons he went to war with the Tigray province is exactly that the Tigray province was trying to move away from his hegemony or his rule because of political disagreements. And so it appears to me that the political psychology of the prime minister says that he thinks that if he just stays the course, that ultimately maybe he will be able to win. But I hate to add that if he insists on that, there is a war coming which will be devastating to both Ethiopia and Somalia, unfortunately.
And meanwhile, since Somalia has the support of the international community generally, what's the way forward? What does the government in the Mogadishu intend to do in the midterm?
I think the government is insisting that they are willing and able to have commercial relationship to Ethiopia if the prime minister's argument is actually the true, that Ethiopia needs access to the sea to be able to develop. Then the president of Somalia and others have said that there are standard arrangements that can be made between the two countries that does not involve occupying 20 square miles of the territory for 50 years. And therefore, there is a way out for both countries without going into a war. But only time will tell whether the prime minister will be able to buy that.
Abdi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from the Somali capital, Mogadishu. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 24th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The World Bank has approved a $300 million financial package for Ghana. Ghana's Minister of Information says the money, the first of a series of three, will play a vital role in easing Ghana's fiscal constraints, sustaining the momentum of economic recovery while protecting the poor and the vulnerable. David Elmela is the World Bank senior economist for Ghana. He tells me the agreement is consistent with the bank's debt sustainability framework.
First of all, I think it's important to explain that this loan is not happening in a void. It's part of a coordinated set of actions to help Ghana recover from the crisis it currently finds itself in. Coordinated set of action includes the World Bank, but also, first and foremost, the government of Ghana and the IMF. And so this operation comes at a critical time for Ghana. The country is climbing out of a macroeconomic crisis that basically was precipitated by pre-existing structural weaknesses and external shocks in 2022. And so those shocks and those weaknesses led to unsustainable public debt, to an inflation that reached over 50%, and to pressure on the balance of payments. And I think one thing that's really important is that the vulnerable segments of the population, the poor Ghanaians, have been particularly affected by this crisis in the form of, you know, increased poverty and increased food insecurity.
You said that $300 million is the first of three disbursements. Are there more loans to be made by Ghana?
Yes, this is correct. This financing is part of a series of three financings, three loans to Ghana, and that's the first one for $300 million. The other two will happen in the course of the next 2 years.
Years back, we used to hear about IMF, World Bank lending conditionalities. Are there any conditions for this loan?
So there are no conditions per se. The loan, its purpose is to support the government's effort and to help them implement key reforms. And in particular, we're trying to support those reforms which align with the World Bank mission and vision of a world free of poverty on a livable planet. So in practice, this operation series, it's aimed to supporting a coherent program of reforms, which really try to do two things. One, in the short term, it's trying to help restore macro stability. And in the medium term, to help lay the foundation for sustainable and resilient economic growth.
You see, I'm asking this question because some opposition politicians have criticized the current government of accruing more debt and that this money will not be used for the purpose for which it is given. So that's why I'm asking for conditions.
Look, I think that what's important to say here is that the money is given as a budget support. So there is no specific allocation of this money that's being transferred to Ghana. However, the World Bank is confident that the reforms that we aim to support have been implemented and are being implemented by the government. And also, like, we work in close coordination with the government and other partners such as the IMF to ensure that the program that Ghana is implementing that aims at restoring debt and fiscal sustainability is implemented. So we're monitoring all sorts of things on top of this financing.
In other words, you'll be watching how this money is used.
Not in detail. But, you know, we're making sure that the overall macroeconomic and fiscal policy framework of Ghana is sustainable.
David Elmala is the World Bank senior economist for Ghana. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. An official of Ghana's main opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC party, says President Nana Akufo-Addo's government does not deserve another loan from the IMF and the World Bank because the government has a poor record of repaying its debt. This after the World Bank announced on Tuesday that it has approved a $300 million financial package for Ghana. Mustafa Bandi is the Deputy General Secretary of the opposition NDC party. He tells me the debt will add to the burden of ordinary Ghanaians.
My initial reaction is that is there some money that is going to sink without benefiting the people? Because fundamentally, as we speak, this government, led by President Akufo-Addo, have exposed our country to unnecessary debt. And what is even worse is that Ghana as a country today, under its government in the last few years, have not been able to meet its debt repayment schedule. So all debts that government owes, we are not able to pay because government is not paying. Number two, the only reason that the Ghanaian economy is collapsing is because our debt stock is close to over 600 billion, which is close to over 88.7% of our GDP. These debts goes to add up to the burden of the ordinary Ghanaian. For me, a country that does not honor its debt should not be able to take more debt. And the IMF, as a stakeholder in the African continent, should have ensured that a government that is taking money will use the money for the intended purpose. Where we all know, and IMF can attest to the fact that Ghana is suffering from corruption under this government, should as well know that giving more loans to that government is not going to be in the interest of the ordinary Ghanaian. It is just going to worsen our circumstance, worsen our situation, expose the ordinary Ghanaian to a lot of hardship.
Mustafa Bande is the Deputy General Secretary of Ghana's main opposition, the National Democratic Congress Party. He was speaking with me from Ghana's capital, Accra. At least 250 million children around the world are out of school, and 763 million adults are illiterate. This is according to UNESCO, which says the absence of children in schools is a violation of their right to education. And as the world marks International Day of Education today, inequality in education is a problem for Africa. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
This year, the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, is dedicating the International Day of Education to the crucial role education and teachers play in countering hate speech. UNESCO Director General Andrew Azoulay says, and I quote, "The accelerated spread of hate speech is a threat to all communities. Our best defense is education, which must be at the heart of any peace efforts. It is our collective duty," she says, "to empower learners of all ages to deconstruct hate speech and lay foundations for inclusive, democratic, and human rights-respecting societies. To succeed," she concludes, "we need to better train and support teachers who are on the front lines in overcoming this phenomenon." The UN says without inclusivity, equitable and quality education, gender equality cannot be achieved, nor will the education sector break the cycle of poverty affecting millions. Experts say access to education is not evenly distributed in Africa, and this is leading to inequalities. Education expert Amos Kaburu says those suffering from limited access to education are coming from poor households, marginalized areas, and overage children.
The groups of population that are suffering from limited access include children living with one or multiple forms of disability. And indeed, if you come to think of the groups that are not benefiting from the education pie, they are the same groups that rely on education for upward social mobility. So the irony is that education doesn't seem to work for them.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, Executive Secretary Okene Gebeyehu is calling on IGAD member states to invest in education for all and foster sustainable learning for peace. Kaburu says teachers have always played a critical role in ensuring peace. However, conflict in most countries in the Horn of Africa hinders the education of children.
In most cases, when these conflicts emerge, obviously are education services serious setback, because learning is significantly impacted and it just can't continue. So yes, Africa still has serious challenges around access, that the education opportunities are not evenly distributed.
He says the world is grappling with a surge in violent conflicts accompanied by a rise in discrimination, racism, xenophobia, and hate speech. These factors cut across geographical areas, gender, race, religion, politics, offline and online. Under the theme Learning for Lasting Peace, stakeholders including ministers, leaders, and educators from across the globe are meeting in New York City to discuss the central role of education in achieving sustainable global peace. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
A documentary by Ugandan singer turned political Robert Chakulai Sentamu, popularly known as Bobby Wine, has received a nomination at the 2024 Oscars. The nomination comes 11 days after the documentary won the Audience Choice Award at the esteemed Cinema Eye Honors 2024. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Chakulai for his reaction to the nomination.
Yeah, we are very humbled to see our Ugandan story making it to such a huge global platform. For us, it has always been our effort to highlight our plight to the international stage. It would help us to convince those that fund the regime in Uganda to reconsider, or at least to put stringent conditions, including respect for human rights and respect for democracy. There's no other way that we would raise our voice than bringing our voice to the Oscars, one of the most prestigious platforms in the world. So we hope this will have an impact and create more awareness of our struggle in Uganda.
To those who are not familiar with your documentary, The People's President, what motivated you to do this documentary and what does it tell the world?
Well, the director heard about my story and he thought it was interesting. So when he requested that he film myself, my wife and my comrades up close, I said yes to it. For us, it was an opportunity to invite the world into our struggle for freedom in Uganda.
What do you hope to achieve from this? What are your expectations from this documentary?
We hope to elevate our voice further, and we hope to ask the world to join our hope and our desperate cry for freedom, for human rights, and for democracy in Uganda. We know that our plight is decided in big capitals like Washington and Europe. We hope to invite them to the real plight, uncensored, unedited, of the people of Uganda, and hopefully they can help us reverse it for the better of the future generations. I would like to add that in this film, myself and my wife, we are not the real heroes. The real heroes are the thousands of the people of Uganda that have paid the ultimate price in the struggle for freedom and democracy. The real heroes are those missing comrades, the political prisoners, and there are millions of the people of Uganda that turned out and always turn out to support us and encourage us and remind us never to give up. I salute them, and I hope we are representing them perfectly on the global platform.
Uganda opposition leader Bobby Wine, he spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga by phone from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital, to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices, our voices, right here on VOA